Forum Opéra. Émission spéciale.
A special podcast with Christophe Prégardien, who's with us today. And good evening, sir.
Good evening to everybody.
So we are meeting in the framework of a competition, and you're watching and listening to all those young singers. Of course, we're not allowed to discuss about any of those singers or even about any of your feelings. But I was wondering what passed by your mind when you were watching all those young singers.
Yeah, to be a competitor in a competition is very different from being a juror in a competition. That's the first thing. And when I approached this competition, I had to think actually about the only competition I made when I was a very young tenor, with about 22, I think. I made a competition in Berlin. And I know how competitors feel in the moment before they enter stage. Mm. It is not a nice feeling often for most of them, as it was for me, because you're full of tension and you are sometimes full of doubts whether you can succeed or not. And I understand how they can feel, but I'm also full of admiration for all these young singers. We had 55 in the first round, and we had every round full house. In the Flagey, it was full house in the first round, and it was full house for the semifinals. And now we have three evenings with full house at the Palais des Beaux-Arts, and it's amazing. Also, the reaction of the audience on the young singers, it gives them courage, and I think they can enjoy despite the tension before performance they have.
Precisely, the feeling you were describing, the feeling of tension, of difficult mindset, is it also something one can feel just before a concert, a normal concert?
You can, but in a normal concert you don't have a jury who will give you points afterwards. You have the audience, of course, and of course you have to learn to handle the tension you have before you go on stage. But it's different whether you go, for me it was always different to sing a concert or to sing for a competition, or a similar situation is when you have an audition for an opera house or for a management or for an agency. It's a difficult thing.
Have you had to do many auditions in the beginning? Because when we're looking back at your career, we kind of think that it all started like that.
I think no career is starting like that. You need a decent education, musical education, before you can enter stage. And of course, I had some strong things in my voice, so I was able to sing very early Baroque music, because I had the experience of choir singing, and this kind of repertoire was easy for me. But the problem for my teacher was when I started singing concerts before I started studying, and the problem for my teacher was to delete all the mistakes I had already in my voice. So you have to be very concentrated on your technical abilities, and so my career was growing slowly, and I'm very happy about it. So in difference to, we talked a little bit about my son Julian, I was always a little bit doubting about myself, and Julian is quite different. He is full of energy and full of self-confidence, and his career is going so fast, and I'm amazed how he really is able to handle the pressure which is upon the shoulders of a young singer.
I imagine this is an issue that you've been addressed many times, but when you're looking at the Bach dynasty, you can see that sometimes it's not easy to be the son of someone. Yeah. I imagine your relationship with your son is quite excellent, but how is it actually on a daily basis to have a son who's doing exactly the same job and the same tessitura?
Yeah, we had time to grow into that situation, because when Julian was 5 years old, he already told me, after having heard Don Giovanni, that he would become a baritone. Oh. I will, because he loved Albert Dohmann, who was Don Giovanni in that production, and he wanted to become a baritone. And I always had to tell him, Julian, you have to wait until you are over the voice break and how your voice develops, and then we can see whether you become a singer at all. So he wanted to become a singer, and I was sure that he would become a musician, a very good musician, because it was to be seen very early, from early stage, that he was a very musical and very musically interested child. So at the end, he became a tenor, and it's really a wonderful situation that he sings exactly the repertoire I've sung, and I'm still singing. So we have learned to get along with each other, which was not easy at the beginning, because he tried to keep away from me, to stay away from me, of course, for obvious reasons. Yeah. So he decided not to study in Köln, where I teach, which was very good, I think, a good decision of both of us, that he studied in Freiburg. So he could find his own way. And if you listen to us carefully, you find some similar things in the timbre and probably in some musical things, but I think we have very different approach to singing. And this is a very good thing, and I'm very proud to be the father of such a wonderful son.
But actually, it's quite interesting, because when you're looking at your son and you, for instance, see that his nose may look quite similar, then you say, oh, those are my genes. But when you hear something similar in his voice, then you start wondering, is this about genes, or is it about him listening to me, or even me listening to him?
I think it's a combination of all the three you have just mentioned. It's the genes, of course. We have similarities in appearance, and we have similarities in speaking voice. We have similarities in singing voice. But he is a unique person, as everybody is a unique person, and he's found his own way to work with his instrument. And so I just can wish him that he stays as modest as he is, and goes one step after the other. He has it in some kinds, in some aspects, he had it a little bit easier than me. But in many aspects, it's much more difficult for him, because I'm his father, and he has to struggle with this idol. And now I think we have found quite a good relationship to each other, and I'm happy about the situation.
I wanted to discuss a quote from the conductor, Philippe Herouet, who was talking about you. And he said, when I'm listening to Christophe Prégardien singing Lied, I can, of course, hear the natural pronunciation of his mother tongue, that is obvious. But I can also hear that he has a very strong relationship with 300 years of the evolution of the German language, and that this language is not only in his brains, but in his blood and in his bones. I think it's quite a beautiful compliment he's making.
It's wonderful, and I can give this compliment back to him, because he is, from my point of view, the conductor for Bach, not only for Bach, but for in Bach's music. He's so special, and that's also because of language, even if it's not his mother tongue. He has a totally right approach to what people in the 18th and 17th century wrote and what they felt. And so I'm always amazed about his knowledge and about his approach to a very old German language. And yes, I think it's important. That's also the reason why I do not sing so much French music, because I read a French text and understand it, but the first layer of a poem is only a little part of what the poet has written and of what the composer has written in his music about that poem. So I think I can understand German so well because I'm German. As Philipp said, it seems to be in my blood. And I can hear with young singers whether they are really able to feel a language. And very often it's that of course, they understand much better to sing in their mother language.
We've, of course, discussed about Lied, but there is one part. The Evangelist is, of course, something you sing with the closest possible relationship to the German language.
Yeah, I think what was always my interest, and I think it should be the interest of every singer, because we are the only musicians who have texts. So our first interest must be to dig as deep as possible into all layers of the text. And that's what interests me in all vocal music, is this digging into language, into digging to find out why has a composer like Bach or Mozart or Beethoven or whoever written this special music on that special text. And to find out whether you agree with the composer about his side on the text or not is also a very important thing. And to be self-confident enough in very small places to disagree with the composer and to decide to make a different approach in interpretation of a text, even if the composer has written a piano or a forte, you change it if you feel at the moment of the performance you feel that it's not right for yourself. And so I think it's a very important thing. Of course, we are servants of the poet and of the composer, but we are also the third dimension, I would say, as a medium to bring the text and the music to the audience.
You're a singer, of course, but you're also a teacher. And I think all the singers I've met in my life have said the same thing about Bach, is that it's incredible music. That is the obvious, but that it is so impossible to sing. So I was wondering about your double approach, the one as a singer and the one obviously as a teacher.
Yeah, I think there is not such a big difference. When I talk to my students about singing Bach, it's not different from what I have experienced when I was younger. I think to be able to sing Bach, you must have a certain and a specific voice. So if you look at my tenor colleagues in the past and in the present, light lyric voices, or also a little bit more firm lyric voices, are very good interpreters for Bach's music and especially for Bach's Evangelist parts, as they are for Schumann, Schubert, Mozart. So we have, as lyric tenors, we have a very broad field of possibilities to sing. And the problem with Bach's music is, of course, that he has written in a way which brings from the singer the most intense and difficult things, because he uses the whole range of voice. So Handel was much more a composer who has written for the voice. I wouldn't say that Bach has written against the voice, but he didn't take care so much for it. And he really tried to find out also the limits of a voice and the limit of a breath. So you have always to struggle with Bach, as you have with many young singers have to struggle with Schubert and with Mozart. Everybody says, if you have vocal problems, go back to Mozart, then you can see what the reason is, and then you can work on that. And there's a truth in it. The very good composers are very often very difficult to sing, but so the best painters are not to be... they don't have many followers.
And
so the best music is difficult to perform.
Precisely. I have the feeling that sometimes Bach forgot about the very idea of breathing, and that the singer's options are, Jesus, where am I going to breathe? And that sometimes it even means something within the music where the singer puts his breathing.
Yeah, breathing is a very big theme. And if you imagine that Bach wrote all his cantatas very often in 1 week, mm-hmm. and at the weekend they had to perform it with very young musicians and singers. So I'm not sure whether everything was technically very on a very high level, even though he had, of course, very good musicians. But I think he would be amazed to hear interpretations of this century and the last century of his music. And I'm very full of thanks to the Baroque authentic music wave, which started at the middle of the 20th century. And what it has brought to the singers is, of course, not only that we have to sing Bach in 415 hertz and not in 440, what makes a big difference, but also that we know so much about articulation, about instruments, about phrasing. And it's such a beautiful world of music where you have so many very different interpretations, and all of them can say they are somehow on the right way, because you have to be tolerant in music.
You have actually met and worked with all those conductors who have embodied this Baroque Renaissance. Of course, we mentioned Philippe Herwig, but one of the main ones is Nicolas Harnoncourt. And we often think that their work was some kind of dogmatic work. And yet, when I just read his last book, his last essays, which were translated in French, there is a very interesting phrase which says, whenever I hear a singer who sings a bit too much into the rhythm, I'm advising them to listen to Frank Sinatra, yeah, or Ella Fitzgerald, yeah, to sort of catch the notes when it arrives.
Yeah, Nicolas Harnoncourt was a very special personality. He was not at all... I only knew him when he was already quite old. Not very old, he started in the 40s and 50s. Of the last century. And probably at the beginning of his career, he had to be strict about some things, about the using of the instruments. And of course, a human being in his life changes his mind a little bit. So from my point of view, was the most inspiring thing was to watch him during rehearsals and performances, to watch his face, to watch his eyes and his hands. And also to listen to him, what he was saying in the rehearsals. So there was one thing. Of course, you have the pulse of music. You have the rhythm, and you have a tempo. But inside this tempo, as a good musician, you should feel, especially as a singer who has a leading role in this music, you have to feel somehow free. And free not in pulse, but in rhythm, yeah. And the rhythm has somehow to do with the language. Mm-hmm. So if you try to find the right way to sing an aria, of course it's more difficult to sing an aria in freedom. Mm-hmm. It's easy to sing a recitative in freedom because you can do with the tempo what you want, in aria not. But still, what he means is not to sing like a metronome, but to feel the normal pulse, and to bring your own personality in the rhythm and in the rhythmical structure.
But there is something so organic behind that thought that reminds us that the singer is, of course, not an instrument, but something quite different from an instrument, but yet also an instrument.
From some singers, I would wish that they think of themselves more as an instrument. And for other singers, I would wish they feel less like an instrument. Also, some composers should be careful with voices, because a voice is a very a very unique thing in music. A human voice is so close to your soul, to your body, to your emotions, and I think it should not be used as an instrument. And we should take the advantage of having text and poetry to give every performance a special touch.
Of course, when you are your own instrument, you are a bit fragile, I imagine. But yet, while talking to you, it's difficult to imagine that you have ever been fragile. Is it something that you really have felt?
Fragility, I'm not a very... You are talking about health, vocal health. Yeah. And I think I have received good genes, not only from vocal things, but also for my body. But I also had to train for it. If you are fearing that you get a cold, you will get it. So I think you should live as normal as possible, not hiding when it's raining outside or when it's cold outside, but giving nature and outside the right place in your life. So I always try to be as normal as possible, but be careful with your instrument. Mm-hmm. And be careful with the instrument. There are some things you have to rest well. You don't have to eat and to drink wrong things before you have to perform. And everybody knows what I mean. And you should not be too much. What is a very difficult thing is air conditioning. I'm very sensitive to air conditioning. So if I have to travel a lot, like flying to the States or to Japan, this is really difficult because you dry out totally and then you are really in danger to get an infection. Mm-hmm. But I was very happy during my artistic life. I think I had to cancel about 5 concerts in now nearly 40 years.
Nothing.
It's nothing. Yeah, it's really nothing.
We mentioned the fact that Philippe Herwegh said that thing about you. One thing we know about Philippe Herwegh, for instance, is that he's full of doubt. And that is not a legend, it is true. I mean, he cannot make his mind on anything, which must be quite difficult as an artist when you are supposed to be under someone's, I wouldn't say orders because it's too, but still. And you've met all those conductors from that Baroque era, new era, who were not, I would say, textbook conductors like all the great ones were before Carl Böhm, etc., but who were like passionate musicians, but who lacked maybe of the initial technique. How difficult is that to make your life through all those different conductors?
Oh, it's very interesting to meet different types of human beings. Some conductors who have a very big ego are difficult to handle, because they always think I'm right. I know how it is. And I much more prefer conductors who at some times give us the impression that they have some doubts about their abilities and about their ideas. So Philippe sometimes gives us too much uncertainty. But the good thing is every performance is different with Philippe, but it is with every great conductor, it is different. What I would say is not probably at the very first beginnings of some of them, they were not able to conduct a Mahler symphony or a Brahms symphony before a 60 man or women orchestra. But it's a difference whether you have a Baroque orchestra with 25 instrumentalists or a big symphonic orchestra. But anyway, as a conductor, and I know what I'm speaking about because I've conducted myself some productions, you have, as a singer, as every musician, you have to learn your Handwerk. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to show your musical thoughts. You have to be able to show dynamics, tempo, and you have to learn that. It's a normal technique like cooking or like painting or like building houses. It's a technique you have to learn. And probably some of them didn't work enough on their beating, but they could give you so many wonderful ideas of interpretation that I think it was not so important.
That's the idea we get from all those conductors, that the preparation is maybe 99% of the work you're doing with them, and then the concert is the 1% on top.
Probably I would say the percentage is a little bit different. You do a lot in the rehearsals, but 99% is too much, because the inspiration of a concert is much more worth than 1%. Very often sometimes you have performances where you have rehearsed a lot and probably too much, and the tension in the concert is too low because everybody is exhausted. So you have to find the right, from my point of view, the right balance between rehearsing as deeply as possible, but to spare some energy and some ideas for the performance. It's the same with the Liederabend, with a recital. Yeah, I always preferred not to speak about every breathing and not about every little rubato in music with my pianists. But to leave some things open in order to be really on the top of your concentration for the concert.
In many, many years, if you had to sing one last Liederabend before you decided to finish, what would you sing?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I think there would be some Lieder I would love to sing, but I can't quote them now. But it would not be only Schubert. I have encountered so many wonderful compositions. And it's a good question. Probably I will think about it. I'm now 62, and I would say I would love to sing as long as possible, because I love being on stage. But I'm also controlling my vocal abilities very carefully, so I know what I'm able to sing and what I should not sing anymore. So probably Bach, or let's say the 440 Bach, I would have to say goodbye earlier than to Schubert's Winterreise. But when that would be, I can't say. I just sang Evangelist in St. John's again, and it worked out well. And so I will go to sing as long as I can really enjoy it, and not only me, but also the audience. But at the moment, I don't feel like saying goodbye.
Because a voice is such a peculiar thing. For instance, if you are a coloratura and you lose your high E when you are 50, for instance, then everybody will say, oh, her career is over. While when you are a baritone or a tenor, you still can adapt your repertoire. But is it a difficult thing to let some roles pass by and just accept the idea that this role belonged to your 30s and this other one to your 40s, and there are many, many other roles which will belong to your future?
Yeah, it's a normal thing in a career that you change. Not only your views on music change, but also your body changes, and so the voice changes. And you have to just to take care for it, and to decide whether you can sing that part, like König in der Nacht. There are not many König in der Nacht who are more than 40 years old. Yeah, and this is, of course, a question of age, and I think women have a much more difficult life as singers as men have, as you just quoted. So if you have a certain Fach, like light lyric soprano with coloratura, you have to hope that your voice changes in the more lyric direction, that you can adapt other parts. And so when I look back, I started with Bach and Handel and Mozart, and I'm still on Handel and Bach and Mozart, but I gained more composers with more, because my voice got a little bit more dark, baritonal, so I was able to sing a lot of Mahler, what I love very, very much. And so I think the musical life is so full of repertoire that you just should take it normal that you change the things you sing.
But there is one very normal thing with the human being, it's the principle of nostalgia. And this is, of course, very important when you're singing Lieder. But it is normal to feel nostalgic towards a part you've sung in the past. I was wondering if you missed some parts today, or even some characters.
I think it's more the feeling that I have not sung some parts which I wanted to sing. Yeah, for example, I never sang Belmonte. I never sang Ferrando. I would have loved to sing, for example, Alfredo in La Traviata. I have sung Verdi Requiem when I was very young. I sang once Verdi because it was my wish, and it was not bad, but of course it's not my repertoire. But there are some parts. So 2 years ago I sang Idomeneo for the first time with Kent Nagano, what was a great experience for me because I love that part. And there are some parts in Benjamin Britten's oeuvre which I would have loved to sing, but there are so many other things I'm able to sing and still to learn new repertoire. So I'm, of course, it's difficult to say goodbye, but I look more into the future than I look back. Probably when I'm getting older, it will be like this, but not now.
One never knows. It's a very healthy thing to look into the future. But you mentioned Benjamin Britten, and this reminds me of the fact that you belong to a generation which has been very crowded with British tenors. When you think about Philip Langridge, of course, or also the late Anthony Rolf Johnson, you've had amazing colleagues, actually. And I imagine you never could share the stage with them.
Yeah, that's a very sad thing that you meet them at some occasions, but you're never on stage with them. And many people have the think about tenors that they are stupid and they are difficult people.
Not Mozart tenors.
No, well, also more heroic tenors. I know so many tenors, and they are normally very easygoing people. It's amazing. I think, to be honest, sopranos are much more difficult. Some of them. It's not a rule. Sorry, sopranos.
maybe we could finish with this. Of course, we've talked about all those great composers, like Bach, Mahler, Mozart. But I imagine there is also a certain joy of discovering other composers. And you have defended many composers who are not in the top list of the composers we see every day.
Yeah, if I look back on my repertoire, which I've recorded with Andreas Steyer, there were some of them like Niklas von Kruft, nobody heard about him before, or Franz Lachner. There are some more. My memory for older things is not very good, I must say. I just realized that my memory for Lieder texts is much better than for composers. Yeah, it's interesting to go not the mainstream to the mainstream repertoire. And I also tried always to learn about new music, about 21st century music. And I had some very good encounters with living composers like Wolfgang Riem or Oskar Strasznoy or Wilhelm Kilmeier. And the problem with the new music, with the modern music, is that people have the audience has a big fear to approach them. And not only the audiences, also the concert producers. If you have something special, if you do it on your schedule, that, hey, oh, must that be? And it's not necessary, and it's so difficult to sell tickets. And I must say, we have also a duty to educate people, audiences, to listen to music from our time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a big museum. You can go to a museum or to a record shop and you can hear recordings from music from the Middle Ages until today. But we are not very good in listening to new music, and well, that's a shame, I must say.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, and all the best.